From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. We've got a split show for you tonight. Later on, Alex Jones joins us, his perspective on world events. And in a moment, Jesse Ventura joins us for a special two-hour portion of Coast to Coast AM. His latest work, 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read. Stand by for that. Here's what's happening. Well, the U.S. government says it has prevented more than 350 people suspected of ties to Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups from boarding U.S.-bound commercial flights since the end of 2009. The tighter security rules imposed after the attempted bombing of an airliner on Christmas 2009 reveal a security threat, they say, that persisted for more than 7 years after the 9/11 attacks. The U.S. Navy has fired a laser gun from one of its ships for the very first time. Researchers used the high-energy laser to disable a boat by setting fire to its engines off the coast of California. Similar systems had previously been tested on land. However, moist sea air presented an extra challenge as it reduces a beam's power. The Navy said the shipborne lasers could eventually be used to protect vessels from small attack boats. A strong new earthquake rattled Japan's northeast Monday as the government urged more people living near a tsunami-crippled nuclear plant to simply leave, citing concerns about long-term health risks from radiation. The magnitude 7.0 aftershock, which trapped some people in collapsed homes, came just hours after residents bowed their heads and wept in ceremonies to mark a month since a massive earthquake and tsunami killed up to 25,000 people there. While the price of gas above $3.50 a gallon in almost all states but one, there are signs that Americans are cutting back on driving now, reversing a steady increase in demand for fuel as the economy improves, they say. Gas sales have fallen for 5 straight weeks, the first time that has happened since November. Before the decline, demand was increasing for 2 months. Some analysts had expected the trend to continue because the economic recovery, they say, is picking up, adding 216,000 jobs since March. Up next, former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura joins us. We will be talking about 63 documents the government doesn't want you to read. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you a little bit about our special guest tonight, Jesse Ventura, former independent governor of Minnesota. He's also a former member of the Navy Underwater Demolition 12 team. Professional wrestler, you all know that, movie actor, talk show host as well, and a visiting fellow at Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Currently the host and executive producer of True TV's Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura. And he's got this reputation as the ultimate nonpartisan truth seeker. He has no qualms, as you'll hear, about questioning authority, and he's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast Worldwide. Jesse, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hi, George. Good to be here. I'm a little tired, you know, when you get on the book tours. It's like about a dozen days right now of getting up about 5:30 in the morning and finishing about 11 at night or later.
Oh, it's a lot. I know, and you're on the West Coast. I'm going to mention where you're going to be tomorrow and the next day. I just left Los Angeles, Jesse. I do my shows now between L.A. and St. Louis, and I go back and forth, back and forth. And it does get to you after a while.
Oh, yeah. You know, it, especially in a book tour like this, you know, it's a whirlwind. You do about 14 to 16 days, and you do so many interviews, you can't even remember them all. And you do these blocks of radio at times where you do 3 hours straight with, 30 stations or whatever it might be. But, you just got to focus. And like I do, I call it put it on automatic and just fly through it. And, of course, I'd rather be busy than laying around doing nothing, because then time marches much slower that way.
Well, at least shows like this, Jesse, you're on 542 stations tonight. So
I didn't realize you're that big.
Oh, it's the largest overnight show in the country. It took the spot where Larry King had this late night slot, then okay. Art Bell, and then here I am. And I echo you a little bit. I mean, I was never an elected official, but I lived in Minneapolis. I was in the Navy. And I've got to tell you, Jesse, not a day goes by where I don't get an email from one of our listeners talking about your television show and what you do, because it is right down everyone's alley. You're a truth seeker. You're looking for it. Our friend Alex Jones is going to follow you a little bit later on tonight. Same thing. We're looking for the truth. Have you always been that way?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I've always been a person, I don't like to be deceived. You know, I can handle the truth, you know, using the old Jack Nicholson thing from A Few Good Men, you can't handle the truth. Well, I believe I can. I would rather know the truth than to have it withheld from me you know, it's just that simple. I can deal with the truth and I'll adapt to it as long as I know what it is. And so it's that simple.
You dedicated your book, 63 Documents, to a fellow that we think the world of on this program. He's been a guest, and like you, I think he's probably one of the only honest elected officials out there now, Congressman Ron Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. I've known Congressman Paul since I met him at the 2008 Counter Convention in Minneapolis. You know, that was the year that the Republican National Convention was there. And, you know, naturally, Congressman Paul wasn't overly welcomed in the Republican National Convention, so he held the Counter Convention. They were over at the XL Center, which is the hockey center where the Minnesota Wild plays. And he held the Counter Convention in Minneapolis at the Target Center where the Timberwolves play. And what I found unique about the whole situation, when you went, which I had to go over to the Republican thing to do a couple TV things, so I had to go over there the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found amazing was the Republican convention looked like a prison. They put up massive barriers, massive fencing. You had to go through three layers of security things plus a metal detector just to get in.
Oh.
Now, countering that, where we were over at the Target Center when Congressman Paul asked me if I'd be a keynote speaker, which I heartily agreed to do as soon as I knew they would let me talk about anything I wanted to. I'm a former season ticket holder of the Timberwolves. We had no more security than the normal security that's at a Timberwolf basketball game.
That is amazing.
There was no security outside, and we were sold out to the brink. There was 15,000 people in there, whatever it was. But I thought, how strange this is that Ron Paul's counter convention, including people like me, required virtually no additional security. And yet when you went over to the Republican convention, like I said, it looked like they were the center of a prison with like four of those big fences you see around prisons.
That's right.
With three security things to get in, plus they even had helicopters flying over the top. You know, that type of security. And I thought, you know, who are really the culprits here? Who really are the bad guys? Why would you need to be protected to that level?
That's a good point.
And where Ron Paul and all of us, we didn't require that. I drove up to the back door. They sent a car for me. Pulled up to the back door, got out of the car, went inside, met Congressman Paul and all this. We had the normal rental security of the Minnesota Timberwolves basketball that's there all the time. The other side, they had to bring in multiple police units from Minneapolis, St. Paul, all the suburbs, and they literally closed down streets, too. It went out like five blocks into the area of where commerce takes place, and all these people that wanted to do business had to shut their businesses down.
There were also people who lived in the area, they couldn't get to their houses.
Yeah, exactly. All of this just to provide security for the Republican convention. And I thought, this speaks volumes to me. Who really is loved by the people that didn't need any protection? And why would these Republicans require that type of protection?
Let's break a major story tonight, Jesse. Tell us you're running with Ron Paul in 2012.
Well, you know, I said that on Good Morning America, I think it was, back. And I did that, you know, and I'll tell you this. But I had a caveat with it. It requires Congressman Paul to leave the Republican Party because I will not. I'm an equal opportunity disliker of both parties. I don't like the Democrats. I don't like the Republicans. My belief is they are not the solution. They are the problem. They, for lack of a better term, they've sold their soul to rock and roll. You can go to both of their conventions and see the same high-priced corporate lobbyists at both paying them all off. So it doesn't matter who wins. I like to refer to it as like going into the grocery store. and you go to the soft drink department, and the only choices you're offered are Coke and Pepsi, two colas, one slightly sweeter than the other. There's no root beer, there's no orange, there's no 7-Up, there's no Mountain Dew. All you get is Coke and Pepsi, and that's your choice. I thought Ralph Nader described them perfectly. It's the two-party dictatorship that we're under today in our country. And so getting back, though, I said that I would give serious consideration. I didn't say I would do it, but if Congressman Paul would leave the Republican Party, I would give serious consideration to being his running mate.
People just want honest government, Jesse, as you well know. I mean, your victory, as you became governor of Minnesota with the Reform Party at the time, was I thought it was a message to the world that people just wanted somebody in there that they could believe. They were fed up with the parties. They were fed up with the political system. And you won. Did it surprise you?
No, I don't do anything to lose. I didn't go into that race to lose.
No, I know that.
I went in to win, and I knew if the chips fell right, and I knew that if things worked out, and the big mistake made was this. The Democrats made a movement that I suppose they thought would be very honorable, but that isn't why they did it. They stated they would not debate unless I was included, because they felt, because I'm fiscally conservative and I'm for smaller government and less intrusive government, they thought that I would zap votes away from St. Paul Mayor, former Senator Norm Coleman, who was the opponent, and of course it was Hubert H. Skip Humphrey, the son of Vice President Hubert Humphrey, and our Attorney General at the time. They made that decision thinking that I would, you know, take enough votes away from Coleman to ensure a Humphrey victory. Well, at the time, Humphrey was polling, I think, about 44% to 46%. Coleman was polling about 32%, and I was at 10%.
Wow.
7 weeks before the election. But when they made the statement that they wouldn't debate unless I was included, I sat back in the corner like a Cheshire cat.
You knew,
and I
right
said, you have no idea the mistake you just made, because I go by the simple thing that I like to say, call it a cliche or whatever. If I can debate them, I can beat them. Because these two parties are so full of baggage, they're so corrupt, that a person like me who doesn't have the corruption can expose their corruption. And you know, you notice how the media, and no movies were made or anything about what we accomplished there.
You're right.
This was bigger than people could believe. And I'm not saying it because I did it. Just the whole thing that happened, because here's the thing that all your listeners need to know, and I'll tell you a quick story.
Okay.
When I was growing up, and I was a teenager, my father, who was a World War II vet with an eighth grade education at the time, stated to me one day that all politicians are crooks. And I, of course, said, come on, Dad, you can't make a blanket statement like that. They can't all be crooks. And he said, oh, yes, they can. You want to know why? And I said, why? He said, because they spend $1 million for a job that only pays $100,000. Nobody in the private sector would do an investment like that. Only politicians. Well, here's the big end of the story that you don't hear much about. Do you know how much money I raised to become the governor of Minnesota?
I'm going to guess, because I've done a little homework, $300,000.
You got it. $300,000. Well, you do your homework, because most people are totally unaware. $300,000, which, and at that time, 98, the Dems and Repubs combined spent $12 million to win that election. Well, my father, that's my one regret in life, is that my mother and father were both gone by the time I won governor. They never saw me become governor.
They would have been proud.
It was a first marriage for both, and they were career people. My dad was 40 and my mom was 30 when they got married, so I always had much older parents than most of my schoolmates did. But I could say to my dad today, if he were around, your son's not a crook, because I bet I'm the only elected official at a high-level election, or maybe any election, for statewide to federal in the last 50 years, who can say they made more money doing the job than what they raised and spent to get it.
You started giving tax money back to the citizens, didn't you?
Well, I'll explain. explain that. But anyway, I made $120,000 a year as governor, which, if my Roosevelt High School math is correct, that means I made $480,000 for the 4 years, which I only spent $300,000.
Yeah.
Who else could possibly say that? Now, where were we going? What did you say until I got that in?
Well, we were talking about primarily what was going on in your life at the time as the governor. But I wanted to ask you why you didn't seek reelection. You would have won.
I know. I had the highest approval rating in Minnesota history for a governor at one point. I was 73%. I'll tell you why. And I wrote about it in my previous book 2 books ago called Don't Start the Revolution Without Me, because I didn't want to discuss it with the Minnesota media because I went on war with them. When they attacked my children when I was in office, I swore I would never talk to them once I got out of office, ever again. And I've kind of mellowed. I've talked to a couple media since then, but I went a few years without. Here's the reason why I didn't seek re-election. It was my wife's health.
Okay.
And I didn't feel that was there. I didn't want the media to know about it because all they would do is exploit it.
Yes.
That was part of the problem. It affected my wife tremendously, and you can imagine as a mother when her children get attacked for no reason by the media. You know,
do you miss it at all?
Sure. I miss it. Absolutely. You accomplish things. It's exciting. You're the top man in the state. Nobody can tell you what to do.
Yeah.
You know, but no, my wife's health, and in my mind, Ed, she's doing much, much better now. And part of it is our move to Mexico, where we live a real simple life down there. I like to tell people, they say, what do you do in Mexico? And I said, well, I wake up every morning with nothing to do. And when I go to bed that night, I'm half done. And so she's doing much better now. But I will tell you this, I will not put any elected job ahead of my wife. My wife is more important to me. We've been together 35 years now. It'll be 36 this summer.
Good.
She is far more important to me than holding any political position. So that is the major reason I did not seek re-election or a second term. Also because I believe one of the big problems in our country is career politicians who make a career out of it.
There's no question about it. But while you were in office, you saved enough money from the state coffers that you started giving taxpayers money back.
No. It wasn't that. It was the robust economy. We had such a robust economy then. Remember, this is before 9/11.
But you did give people refunds,
Absolutely.
Basically.
What happened was this. I'll explain. We would set a budget, and of course you got your normal taxes in place because the economy was so powerful. That's why I ran for governor. The state was getting surpluses. You know, they were bringing, and of course at a state level you have to run by law a balanced budget.
Right.
It's not like the feds who can get all this debt.
Yeah.
But they, because of revenues were coming in so big, that was why I ran. We had a surplus before I got in office, and they spent it. And I said, wait a minute. They had a budget. If there's excess money, it doesn't give the politicians the right to be kids in a candy store and just go on a shopping spree. You give that money back. And so we had 3 surpluses out of the 4 years I was in office, and we would give checks back to the people in the form of a sales tax rebate. And the reason I did it that way, the Republicans wanted it to be an income tax rebate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I would have done an income tax rebate, they would have to declare it, which means a third of their money would go to the feds. I thought, why do that? Let's make it a sales tax rebate. We'll credit it to the sales tax. You can't deduct the sales tax off your taxes. So therefore, when you get the money back as a sales tax rebate, it's free money. You don't have to declare it to the federal government. And people called them Jesse checks. And in fact, I met an elderly woman who told me that she took her check, and some of the checks were as much as $1,500, $1,800 to people. It depended on your income and how much we felt you would buy, things like that. It wasn't purely accurate. No, you could never be purely accurate, but it was close enough. And this old woman told me she needed a new lawnmower. And when the check came, it was enough money for her. She went down and bought her new lawnmower, and she named it Jesse.
I love it. Well, you know what I like about you, Jesse? If you and I went to lunch, Yep. And I had a $20 bill on the table and went to wash my hands. When I came back, you'd put another 20 down there. It would be 40. Any other politician, the 20 would be gone.
Well, maybe I learned that overseas, because when we were overseas in the military, which, of course, in my day it was Vietnam, money really meant nothing. We were into Louis L'Amour cowboy books. And if you put a Louis L'Amour cowboy book and a $50 bill down on your rack, your bed, the 50 would still be there. The Louis L'Amour cowboy book would be gone, because that had value. The money didn't.
Jesse, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. We'll be right back with Jesse Ventura, his book, 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read. When I come back, I'll also tell you about a couple book signings he's going to have in the Los Angeles area. And next hour, we'll take phone calls with Jesse Ventura. We've got him for 2 hours. We'll be right back. Well, with New York Times bestselling author Jesse Ventura, wrote a book with Dick Russell called 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read. What are some of them? We'll get into that in a moment. By the way, those of you in the greater Los Angeles area, on Tuesday and Wednesday, Jesse will be signing his book for you. Let me give you those locations. The ESP Zone at LA Live, great area, by the way. He'll be there Tuesday night, 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific time. Those of you that live out that way. Then on Wednesday, he'll be at the Borders Bookstore in Torrance, California. That's 3700 Torrance Boulevard. He'll be there from 7 to 9 p.m. Going out there, it's a real treat. Jesse Ventura, our special guest, and we'll be back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We'll take calls next hour with Jesse, not this hour. Jess, all the lines are already busy. People, tell me about the evolution of the television show, which is the highest rated show on True TV.
Well, first, let me say, I now have a website.
Ah,
first
super.
Time in history. And,
you've come out of the dark ages. Tell me about it.
Well, because my son's running it. He's
all right.
The computer whiz, but anyway, for those that are interested out there on Coast to Coast, it's, of course, all one word, no apostrophe. It's weaintgottimetobleed.com.
Super, and we'll put a link up for you at
Coast to Coast. Yep, weaintgottimetobleed.com. And that's, we went up a week ago, then the official Jesse Ventura, this is the only one that's actually official. If there's others out there, they're not. But this is my official website.
Ask your son tomorrow how many hits he got on the website, and it will astound you.
Okay, I sure will. I'll see him tomorrow, so I will ask him if he's checked at that time, and then I'll see him again Wednesday, too. So between the 2 days, I'll try to find out.
I'll make you a little wager. You ready?
Yep.
I bet you will get slammed so much that he will say, Dad, it got slowed down to a stop for at least a few hours.
Okay.
That's the bet. You're on.
I'll find out what he says to me about it.
Super. Okay, now the TV show, Conspiracy
sure.
Theory.
Yeah.
You know, when I started doing this radio program, Jesse, full-time back in 2003, half of the subjects I was really into, the paranormal, the unusual, ghosts, and things like that.
Yep.
The conspiracy stories, you know, I was 9 years in the Navy. I was an officer. You know, I believed the government line. You know, I was a little weary about these, other than the Kennedy assassination. But
right.
Then, you know, I started getting people calling me saying, hey, you got to listen to this Alex Jones guy, or you got to listen to this and that. And all of a sudden, I woke up. I simply woke up. Is that what happened with you, too?
Yeah, I think it is. I'm also a Navy veteran, not quite as long as you, but of 6 years. And, you know, I again, Kennedy, the same. I started studying Kennedy, ironically, when wrestling made its change in the mid-80s. We went from territories driving cars to when Vince McMahon took us national and all of a sudden we're flying in airplanes all around the country. Well, anyone is travels at all in airplanes knows they're boring. You spend hours in airports, hours on planes, and in wrestling you do it every day.
Yeah.
So I began reading and I began digesting everything I could on the Kennedy assassination, and, you know, I came to the conclusion there's, you know, we've been fed a pile of bull. Lee Harvey Oswald could not have acted alone to pull this off like they told us. It's a lie. Well, then, of course, as we got to 9/11 happening, I was in office, and I, like everyone, went into full combat mode when I was in office. I felt, hey, the state of Minnesota could be a threat with Mall of America and all of that. And so I was busy doing that. I didn't pay attention until I got out of office in 2003. And what really caused me to start really questioning things was when George Bush stated we were now going to invade Iraq. Because I thought, wait a minute, they told us that these guys, 19 guys that attacked us, there wasn't one Iraqi. Not one.
Not one.
Why would we invade Iraq? I thought, this is as strange as if Pearl Harbor happened and we invaded Korea and thought, well, after all, they're Asian too, aren't they? You know, and I thought, this makes no sense. This is crazy. Why are we going into Iraq? And of course, then in 04, I was teaching out at Harvard when Robert McNamara came through and basically said that the Gulf of Tonkin incident was a fraud. You know, he fessed up that stated it didn't happen. And I thought, my God, that's what put us into the Vietnam War, where I'm a veteran of. 58,000 of my generation killed, possibly a million or more Vietnamese killed. And the catalyst was what we would call, of course, today a false flag operation. Are you kidding me? Well, that's when I really started to say, what is going on here, which was after 2004. And I started to truly then investigate 9/11. And, of course, my son came home, and the big catalyst there was he kept saying to me, Dad, you got to see this thing on the Internet called, what was it again, spare change or loose change?
Loose change.
He said, you got to watch this thing on the Internet, loose change. So my wife and I had come home from Mexico, and it was I remember May or June, that was a beautiful sunny Sunday, nothing to do, we had nothing to do, and I looked at my wife and said, well, this thing my son keeps telling me about loose change, let's watch it. I watched it, and I went through every emotion I could, from anger, laugh, crying, everything, almost feeling sick, when I started seeing what they had produced on this thing. And then I became focused on 9/11, and I said, I want to learn as much as I can about what they said happened here. And today, I don't believe the government story of 9/11. I think that if certainly, here's the three options as I look at it. Either we knew about it and allowed it to happen.
Right.
Or we knew about it and participated in it.
Mm-hmm.
Or these were the dumbest buffoons that could have ever been in charge of our country, who could have all this pre-information. I mean, I always remember Condoleezza Rice with that August 6th memo that states as clear as the nose on your face, Bin Laden will hijack planes and run them into buildings, and she testifies, we had no idea. Well, and then, of course, they didn't listen to Mr. Clark of the NSA, who had been warning and warning, and I started to think they knew what was going to happen. They either are part of it or they allowed it to. There's no doubt in my mind.
And, Jesse, add a fourth point to this.
Okay.
Let me tell you this. I believe that on this planet, there is a bigger group of people who are controlling everything. They are the puppet masters of presidents, of prime ministers. They've got more money than God. They control destinies of countries.
You may be right, George, because of the fact that what's proving that to me right now is Barack Obama.
Yes,
because,
exactly.
You know, President Obama ran on a platform of change we can believe in. And it was like all these things he said he was going to do, get us out of the war, close Gitmo, he hasn't done. And now we're in a third war.
No,
and I can only assume, you know what? What did they do? Bring him in and show him the Zapruder film? And say, this could happen to you? I don't know, but clearly it's showing me you probably are absolutely right.
And
that the president's nothing but a figurehead and somebody else calls the shots.
Right. And what I think these people did is they went to a Bin Laden and said, okay, you've got these little wackos running around all believing with you. You've been on our payroll for years anyway. We need something like this done. And boom, off it goes.
Well, either that or I believe Bin Laden's been dead for a long time.
Which is possible.
I mean, the guy's on a dialysis machine. How the hell can you be humping around the hills of Afghanistan and get your dialysis treatment?
Donald Rumsfeld was on a radio show, a friend of mine, Mancow, a few weeks
ago. Oh, I know Mancow.
Okay, Eric, a good guy.
Sure.
And he asked Rumsfeld about building number 7. Which I want to talk with you about in a second.
Sure.
And Rumsfeld said, what's that? how could the guy who was the head of our Defense Department not know about Building 7 or at least play dumb about it?
Well, did Mankow explain it to him then?
Yeah,
what was
yeah.
his reaction?
Oh, he did. He just had this blank face on him. And, I mean, that building alone, nothing hit that building.
Yep.
And it came crumbling down just like the other ones.
Well, okay, here's the tie into the book that Dick and I just did.
Mm-hmm.
We produced the documents from NIST, the official investigation, which took about 6-7 years before they made it public. And in the documents, they state the building came down freefall. Well, that's the same as saying it's demoed, because
yep.
freefall means that it's falling with no resistance, that it's falling like I used to jump out of airplanes, freefalling. And that can only happen when all the resistance is removed, because anything else defies Newton's laws of gravity, and you can't defy physics. Physics is what it is. And so here are the government documents in my book from the government. You know, it's their documents. It's not mine. Let me see it. I believe it's document. Let me go to my book here.
Sure.
I don't have them all memorized.
I know what it's like when you write these books and then
This is like review. But when you go to document 47, the free fall of Building 7, you know, it's document 47, which it's their own documents and their own words that say the building went into free fall. That can only happen if all resistance is removed, and there's only one way to do it, with demolition.
And most of the members of the 9/11 Commission, Jesse, did not feel they did an adequate job.
Well, yeah, and I'm certain they didn't, because they didn't do an adequate job. They didn't investigate anything. And if you want to, George, if you want to know volumes, always follow the money. You know that.
Exactly.
Here's a little point. You remember Whitewater?
Yep.
Okay, Whitewater. They spent $100 million to learn ultimately the president cheated on his wife, right?
Yeah.
Do you know how much after George Bush stonewalled any investigation for what? Nearly a year and a half, 2 years, till the families put so much pressure on. Do you know what originally they allocated to investigate the death of 3,000 people?
How much?
$4 million.
Oh, my God.
They spent $100 million on Whitewater. They allocated initially $4 million. I think it ended up costing $11 or $12 in the end. But, I mean, that should speak volumes to your listeners out there stating they didn't want a real investigation, because, why, you know, there was no interest in spending money. And here's another quick one. Have you ever read the book called Kill Bin Laden?
No, I've seen some excerpts from it.
Well, it's written by Colonel Dalton Fury, who was the head of the Delta Force when they had him pinned down at Tora Bora.
Okay.
And in the book, he says there was only one escape route through this valley between the mountains into Pakistan. He tells in the book that he wanted to insert the Delta Force on the other side of the mountain and wait in ambush, so that when Bin Laden attempted to escape Tora Bora, the Delta Force would be waiting there for him, right?
And we could have done that. Yep, great.
Well, what happened, he had to go to the Pentagon, or up to the White House, and he said right in the Oval Office, Bush and Cheney denied him the ability to do that. They wouldn't let him do it.
Why not?
Well, clearly they didn't want him caught. Clearly, that was the escape. That's all I can make out. And here's what really gets me now, you know, is that all you heard from Bush was that he lets his field commanders call the shots and do the war. Well, in this case, he certainly didn't. And I challenge with this. You got George Bush, who couldn't even make it to National Guard meetings. You got Dick Cheney, who had like 5 deferments from the military during Vietnam, and those two bozos are overruling the expertise of an elite Delta Force commander.
Amazing.
Well, clearly to me, George, doesn't it look that way? They didn't. They gave him a way out, and Bin Laden took it.
Yep. Yeah. Look, we know,
and
Jesse.
This isn't me again. The book is called "Kill Bin Laden," and the author is Colonel Dalton Fury.
He was on the CIA payroll for years.
Yep, and I urge everybody to read the book for yourself and make your own judgment on that.
As you look at this planet today, the economy, this push for a one-world government, the collapse in the Middle East. What do you think's going on?
I don't know, but you know, when people talk about the one world government, not that I'm for it, but you know, it may be inevitable.
I think it's inevitable. I agree with you.
Because
we might not
the world is getting so much smaller, George, with technology and computers, that it maybe not in our lifetime, but maybe 100 years from now, there will indeed be one government in charge of the whole planet.
Yeah, I envision a one military rule in all of these countries, including the United States. We're going to be like little satellites of the whole.
And, you know, okay, there's a good side to that. Maybe. If you have a world government, then that means there shouldn't be any wars anymore, right?
There shouldn't be.
There shouldn't be. But the key is, how can you ensure that this one world government aren't going to be tyrants?
That's right. That's the downside.
That's the million-dollar question there. I mean, you know, I could possibly live with it if the one world, because I've always stated publicly, the greatest government in the world would be benevolent dictator. But the key is you got to be benevolent.
You're not going to find one.
Well, because as a benevolent dictator, you could get everything done. If you needed to build the bridge, you order it. The bridge is built. But again, the power corrupts. So the point is you could never find anyone. And plus, you'd also, George, have to put term limits on benevolent dictator.
Now, and when you said you're in Mexico now, does that mean you're not happy with the United States?
I'm not happy with the United States, absolutely, but Mexico is not the reason. I am not happy with the United States. I'll go on record right now and state that. In fact, I have T-shirts on my website that state, and people can get them, I love my country, not my government. Because there's a difference.
There's a huge difference,
and not a lot of people understand.
We have
those T-shirts because that's a quote I said. I said, I love my country, but not my government, because I don't like Democrats and Republicans. It's that simple. They are the problem, not the solution. When they're out there talking about who to blame, it's them. They've been in charge for my whole life. They're to blame. That's the situation, I guess.
I was 13 when John Kennedy was killed. I think you were 12.
Yeah, we're about the same age. I was born 51.
Yeah, and I was in 50. You got a birthday coming up in July, don't you?
Right.
Okay, and from that moment on, I think we lost this country.
Well, that was a coup d'etat.
Yep.
No doubt about it. It was a coup d'etat where our president was removed, not by ballot, not by vote, but by a bullet. And I'm just unbelievable that on my show this past year, Conspiracy Theory, we did it. They promised me the second year I could do JFK, and we did. And I thought we brought a lot of good points to light. But the big thing, the big climax for me was the confession of E. Howard Hunt.
Yes.
We had it on tape, audio, visual, and written. He confessed to his son, St. John Hunt. And what got me, there wasn't one word even said in the mainstream media about it.
Not at all. We had St. John on the program. When this was all happening, but you're absolutely right. I do believe him.
I do too. I believe him. He's a level-headed guy. He seemed like a straight shooter to me.
I don't think on his deathbed E. Howard Hunt had anything to gain. I think he was talking from the heart.
No, but here's what I got out of it. He wasn't confessing out of remorse.
No, not at all.
He was confessing out of being proud.
He felt he was doing something for his country.
Yeah, they thought that this, because I guess they thought Jack Kennedy was some commie pinko or something that got elected, and he was too soft with the communists. And it was a confession of pride, and that's what really was chilling about it to me.
What do you think of WikiLeaks?
I think they're heroes.
If they're allowed to do what they're going to do.
What's that?
They're going to squeeze them and shut them down, won't they?
Oh, sure they are. Then who I'm really worried about is this young Private Bradley Manning.
Yeah.
Who allegedly leaked it all.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Quantico right now, and they're torturing him. From what I've heard, he's naked. They got him in solitary confinement. He's facing 52 years, and who's to say they're not waterboarding him? Because let's remember now, we're a country who tortures. We no longer have the high ground anymore, and I have been waterboarded, George, so I speak from experience. It's torture. It used to be called Chinese water torture.
You feel like you're drowning, don't you?
Well, worse than that is what you get initially. Have you ever gone in the water and got water in your sinuses?
Yes,
it
I've done
that. Well, this thing, waterboarding literally fills your sinuses. They're the first things that fill up. And then you got the burning pain. Then you feel, as it continues, like you're also drowning.
That is scary. Jesse,
oh, it's horrid.
We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back with a final hour with you. Phone calls with Jesse Ventura. We're talking about his work, 63 documents the government doesn't want you to read. He doesn't hold back. You're next on Coast to Coast AM.